Welcome to 74 Escapes new podcast series, Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu. I'm Vera, and I will take you on a gastronomic journey to explore food as an expression of cultural identity. I'll be hosting chefs and industry professionals from all over the world to discuss everything about this art form that really nourishes our souls. Let's start.
On this episode of Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu, I'm so excited to be speaking with Chef Virgilio Martinez. Virgilio is a world-renowned Peruvian chef. Born in Lima, Peru, he's a pioneer of spreading Peruvian cuisine globally. Virgilio's mother was an artist, which reflects so distinctly in his cooking and philosophy. An aspiring skateboarder, he turned to law after an injury and then set out to explore the world. After traveling and living in many countries, cooking and exploring, he returned to Peru, where he found the charm and diversity of his own country. Virgilio expands Peru through distinctive food concepts with classical French techniques. The Restaurant Central was named number 5 in the world according to World's 50 Best Restaurants in 2018. And today I am so honored to have Chef Virgilio on this episode of Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu. Welcome, Chef. How are you today?
How are you, Vera? Nice to see you. And thank you for the invitation. What a pleasure to be here.
Such an honor to have you. I'm very sad that I missed you at the pop-up with Zayu.
A few days. Yeah.
And I'm very excited to talk to you. And unfortunately, Peru is one place I haven't visited, and hopefully after this pandemic, I'd be honored to come to your country. And please tell me, how do you think growing up in Peru informs your style?
Well, you know, I didn't want to become a chef until I started to travel. You mentioned that my thing was skateboarding. Like I wanted to be a pro skateboarder. And I was doing my thing in Peru, in Lima. So and I had all these influences by artists and people from the streets in Lima, Peru. So it gave me a lot of a different vision. Changed my mindset in a way that I just wanted to do something different. And Peru is in terms of nature is a huge inspiration for chefs, for people from different fields. I'm living in Peru. I used to live like 10 years abroad, but the time I'm here, I'm saying probably in the past, let's say 15 years, I've been learning a lot. Every single day about my country and you know how much biodiversity there is here.
Just like you, I studied law. Actually, I have a degree in paralegal studies, and I've always been fascinated with Paris, and I was so confused and lost after I worked for a lawyer really for a year that I just gave up and I went to Paris and I never came back. I mean, 7 years later, I arrived in America. When I said I want to be cooking, and I have been cooking, but I said I want to cook it, I want to cook professionally. So it's very funny that we have these parallels, but the passion that I had for food was always there. So was it there for you throughout your life between skateboarding and law? Tell me.
You know, I was getting into this bohemian Lima lifestyle. Flying to the Andes, to the Amazon, all these very mysterious and unique places. And at one point, for my family, they say like, that's enough. Like, I mean, like you should be doing something which is like more you know, serious. That's the one of the main reasons I started to study law.
Lawyer and doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Doctor, engineer, lawyer. So one of the main reasons that I started to law, it was because I love reading. I say like why not? But when I faced the whole thing about being a lawyer, I say like this is too much for me. Like, maybe for you the same, right?
It was not very fascinating sitting in a box. No, I wanted to live life, to eat different foods. I'd rather take a risk, not knowing what's going to be tomorrow, but have a fantastic experience, and maybe sometimes not be so safe, but have an adventure.
Sure. And you know, honestly, like during these times, there were no culinary schools in Peru. So the whole gastronomic scene here in Peru wasn't that big. I mean, probably it was even difficult to find well-known chefs in Peru. So I had to travel and study abroad. Yeah, and that was tough. Of course, for my family. Because you know, being a chef wasn't an option. Yeah, but you know, in a way, I was following my passion, and that was it.
But it's interesting because your father was a lawyer, so I'm sure he must have been pretty upset. But your mother was an artist, so did she understand your passion and that you were driven and to explore the world?
Yeah, I mean, she was I must say she was the only one supporting me with this new adventure, which my dream to become a pro skateboarder was over. Then the other dream to be a lawyer, you know, was breaking apart. And then she mentioned that I should just do whatever I really feel that
well,
I want to do.
She understood that you were trying to find yourself.
Yes. And it's funny because I started traveling a lot, and I started cooking in different kitchens in the world. And you know, in a way, I was looking for my identity. And when I came back to Peru after 10 years, as I said, I realized that my whole identity was here, like cooking with my things and doing my stuff. And I have so much gratitude about the places I've been to in the world. But nowadays, these present times are quite cool, you know. Like living in Peru and being a chef here is quite like I feel like this. I'm living the right decision.
I admire your travel spirit. So you set out to Canada, to France and Germany, and what were the chefs and who were they and how did they change the way you cooked and who were your biggest mentors?
You know, I had quite a few. I must mention that the first fine dining restaurant that I went was Lutes long time ago. I mean, Lutes in New York. Yeah. And you know, that was
back then.
New York back was then. Long time ago. The restaurant is already closed. It's been I spent there like 1 year, and yeah, I had this amazing opportunity to understand, you know, the basics of French cuisine. Then I moved to, I did a few months at the Ritz in London. Then I went to
Posh.
yeah, So I went to different experiences. You know, I did like a street food in let's say in Thailand, which was fun, in an island. And then I did high end restaurants. Of course, I went to a few in Spain, a few in Peru here with Gaston Acurio. He actually opened his restaurants in Madrid in Spain. Mm-hmm. I can tell you like lots of people that has been part of the team who has been an inspiration for me to keep traveling, because once you meet one person, that person leads you to another person in some other place.
How it works, it's a chain of events.
Yes, voilà. And then you don't know, and you suddenly you end up in Tokyo or wherever, working in a kitchen and trying to understand a new culture, which was for me was one of my real interests was about learning about different cultures.
It's very interesting because we almost seem to have such a similar path where. I also came back from Paris and from law, where I realized I don't really want to be in the lawyer's office. And in Paris, I ate and drank. And I said, I just don't want to do anything but cook. And then I started to work in Daniel, although I did catering there. But still, it was a Michelin restaurant. And then I worked with an amazing chef, Pascal Lusignac, who's a French chef who does Gasconian food in London. And I mean, Paris was fantastic. I never worked there, but I ate my way through. And then I ended up working for Zayu in Tokyo. So it's really cool. One thing I have not really sharpened my skills was Peru, or I mean, it's become so such an inspiration. These days, Peru and Brazil. So I find that, and there's this parallel where it's Russia, for example, Moscow, which was not known for food before. And after sanctions, there were chefs who did work in Copenhagen and Tokyo.
Sure.
That started to say, hey, you know what? We actually do have amazing produce. We can go to north and get the crabs and 15 different kinds of crabs and the scallops, and we have farms that we can grow vegetables, and everything is seasonal. So just like Peru, Russia has started to embrace the ingredients that they have with the techniques that they learned abroad, how to cook in France, how to cook in Copenhagen and Japan. And I think it's really interesting that the countries were not thought of as food destinations are now are.
Sure. I mean, like, it depends on how much you enjoy the culture of the place and the people over there. And you mentioned a few, foodie destinations or culinary, cities. Yeah, like nowadays Moscow. Like probably 5 years ago, not many people knew that Moscow was
there for 5 years. And then I came back and I was taking on this food journey. I said, "Oh my goodness, I'm actually part of my country."
Yeah, there is a whole revolution going on there.
Big revolution. Just like
with Peru. Yeah, and Peru. In Peru, happened before a few cities in South America, but now you see also like Buenos Aires, Bogota, of course, Sao Paulo, Rio, and in a way, of course, we must say we're pretty much like connected, chefs and people and. The travelers, the people like you, when you go, probably you go to another city and you're looking for something new, and this is it. I mean, every time you go to another city, there is something that should be impressed by.
I'm very open-minded. I mean, for me, it can be anything from street food to three Michelin star restaurant, but it's I don't go to a city just because of food. Of course, it's a big part of it, but it's surprising to be so surprising and unexpected, whereas, you know, that France is always known for food, and Spain, but when you go to Russia and Peru and now new cities up and coming, it's kind of magical to be, wow, it's a surprise. Hey, this so amazing. So it's nice to have this element of surprise in a way, and to know that these guys
yes.
are actually starting to become on a global level of food destinations as well. Whether it's a trend or not, just deep down, we still know, hey, the food is good. I really enjoy being here. Whether it's a taco or, anything street food.
Yeah, well, of course, maybe I remember when they started to cook, of course, France was the place to be, like of course, you had to go there, and then...
Everybody knows you're going to eat well there.
Yeah, of course, and still is the place, but the thing is that nowadays, there's too many places in the world, and let's say just Asia, you know, you mentioned Russia, you know how much biodiversity there is there,
of all, Russia has 11 different climate zones, so it's gonna
huge
foods. You can actually have, you can go north and get the most amazing scallops and crabs, or you can be south in Sochi, and it's a country that has 11 different climate zones is going to be very rich in food. It's not
actually nowadays where we are looking for more natural spaces to be inspired by, and then I mentioned Asia, Latin America, well, Peru, of course, where I work, and we keep exploring Peru. You know, here we have the mountains, the Andes, and then we have the Amazon, the jungle, and
there's so much more. It's just like there's just so much more to explore.
yes, and that's quite cool. It's just amazing. There's no limits, and that's why as long as you keep your mind open to new possibilities. This is actually our fits well for our creativity and innovation. You know, you need this fuel to wake up and do what's next, what's gonna be nice today.
It's kind of like Faroe Islands, where the population itself didn't know what gifts they had in their sea, where they have the biggest langoustines, mahogany clams, and up until recently, their own folk didn't know that's what they had. It's the same with Russia, it's the same with Peru. It's just go out and explore, because they're stuck in their ways, and Russia was always like, hey, meat on potatoes, and I'm sure Peru is just like, oh, hey, it's just ceviche, but there's so much more land in the sea, because it's a...
Sure.
Beautiful. I mean, geographically, there's so much more to explore. So I think begin more, you can always find something.
Sure. I mean, of course, when there's no way to avoid these clichés of, you know, Peru ceviche, Russia beets, turnips. I don't know. Yeah. France, foie gras, whatever, you know, Spain, paella, I don't know. Yeah, there's too much about that. The thing is, now there's so much information that, we can fly with dishes and ideas and produce and just, you know, by traveling, you can see that every single place has its own, let's say, emotion,
So I know you actually did work at Four Seasons in Singapore doing dim sum.
Oh yeah, that was okay.
Find Chinese cuisine the most complex and very, very complex and so challenging. What were your challenges while you were there? Because I think it really takes an incredible amount of skill to be able to even make a dim sum. So what was it like for you when you were in Singapore making dim sum?
You know, I was working in an Italian restaurant, run by the Four Seasons in London, and I asked the chef, like, I know there's lots of Four Seasons, but I love to. It was a long time ago. I love to go to Singapore for the first time, and I wanna do Chinese cuisine. Like, you know, I was doing very Mediterranean cuisines and I went there, and you know, I felt when I stepped in that kitchen, I felt so useless because you know, my craft wasn't that good to do dim sum, you know. So technically this type of preparations are so difficult, like that really, for me, it was really opened my mind. Like
stuff, and it's a lot of finger. Like you have to. It's. I find it so incredible. People who just do dim sum.
Yeah, well, it's by experience and repetition. You know, the way people is working with their hands. You know, and this is something that I love. You know, working with my hands, and that's one of the reasons I also decided to be a chef. Coming from doing something related to craft.
I used to play piano, and I think your fingers have a muscle memory. So when you can type and play piano and cook and make the dumplings, it's all in this, it's hands.
And also, it's so repetitive that, you know, it's like, it's something that you keep repeating, but in a way, you don't get bored. I mean, because you are so in contact with this thing, and it becomes your craft. So you're quite happy doing this. And I really appreciate people that, you know, maintain their focus on one thing or a few things. Where we live in times where we are like now, like multitask people doing many, many, many things. I really now understand, you know, the whole effort of doing just one thing or two things in the kitchen.
Well, at this time, I think we should maybe make a plot to all the Japanese shakers of the sea urchins who do the same thing 10 to 12 hours. They just shuck in sea urchins. That's all you do. It can be.
Yeah.
Or factory workers. It's the same process. All DuPont. It's
me. You're right. All my respect to these people.
Kudos to them. God bless them.
Yeah, sure.
I really admire these people. It's fascinating. I would be bored after 3 days.
Yeah, me too.
So you had all these experiences which I can connect to. Then you come back to Peru. So how did you change Peru's food world once you got back? Like, what was your what was your goal? What was your strategy? How did you?
Yeah. Yeah, you say it was kind of a strategy because I checked that that it was obvious that the fine dining here was still based on French cuisine and European cuisine. And not many people were doing like 100% Peruvian cuisine. And of course, Gastón Acurio, he was an expression of the new Peruvian cuisine. But he was still doing like Peruvian recipes. And we planned with the team we decided to have a research and interpretation center, which is called MATER. And we decided to work on cataloging new ingredients because we end up seeing like so much diversity and so much ingredients, and we didn't want to do Peruvian recipes. We just wanted to work with 100% Peruvian ingredients coming from different parts of Peru. And we did 1 year of exploration through different regions of Peru. So that's why we came with the idea of making a menu based on the elevations of Peru, because Peru is starting from the sea, then you go up to the mountains, and then you could go very, very up in the mountains, and then you go down to the Amazon.
Different tastes, different...
Yes. Different ecosystems, different cultures. People from the Amazon is different from the people to the Andes, and people from the coast like me were different.
I mean, we are more. But it doesn't boil the same way if you up in the mountain. This is like a number one example. So if the water does not boil the same way when you're high up on the mountain, the altitude. So therefore, what do you think about? The animals and the plants and the cooking, absolutely different story.
Yeah, and of course the mindset of the people, of course, like people think in a different way. The relationship that people has with nature is so different than the one we have here in the city, in Lima, such a crowded city and some of the hectic city. But then, you go to the Andes, but then you go to the Andes and there's not only one picture of the Andes. There's too many. And then you go to the jungle, to the Amazon, and there's not only one jungle. There's not only one river. There are too many. So our idea was to do a menu based on these natural spaces and places and landscapes and people, and in a way show how gastronomy is connecting to different fields and different geographies. And whatever we can do in Peru, now I can see this, like because 10 years ago I had no idea that. Now, being so much local, you are becoming very, very global, because you are training this kind of adaptation to different spaces and mountains and rivers and different geographies.
People know Italy, but people know Italian different cuisines. There's north, there's south. So why is Peru perceived just as one? Russia is also not just one. If I'm in Sochi, it's a different seafood. If I'm in north, it's a completely different as well. So same as countries that have not been known up until this moment, Russia's in whole, Peru's in whole. It's completely different climates, different regions, wherever you travel.
Sure, Russia is a huge example of diversity, because you can see on the map and the land, you know, like even from, I think from one border, you're very close to Japan, right?
And this is the next question. Peruvian food, I found many find very similar to Japanese, because it's very, very pure. So even if you start with ceviche, cliche, but...
Sure.
Why do you think there is such so many similarities?
Yeah, you know, here we used to have, I mean, we had a big influence by Japanese cuisine, because we have a big group of Japanese coming to Peru to live. But it's not about this. I think it's about the respect that people have for nature. Mm-hmm. That in a way,
I agree.
Put these two nationalities, these two nations, in the same level of appreciation of ingredients, of nature.
You respect the juice, you respect the seasons.
Sure, sure. The seasonality.
It's very pure. It's just pure to me.
Yeah, and you say pure is quite a good example because, you know, let's say another cliche, sashimi, you know, it's so like one thing that has to be perfect. The same thing kind of happened with ceviche, like, you know, people is looking for the best fish and just a few drops of the best sauce and that's it. And you know, and the same is happening with lots of recipes and lots of preparations. So even the aesthetic is quite similar. And that really surprised me every time I go to Japan and I see, you know, how, like, keep asking myself, like, in at one point, maybe we were connected or whatever happened, I don't know. But it's just, I think, this sense of nature that we both have.
Okay, so pure stuff aside, but what do you like to eat? Like, what's your kind of guilty pleasure?
I love chocolate like crazy. Yeah. It's something I eat every day.
Like breakfast wise, lunch wise, what's your sort of go-to?
Well, you were saying ceviche, like here we eat ceviche like twice a week, yeah, for instance. And, but this is something normal. I mean, and it's healthy, it's good. But then, you know, when we go for Chinese cuisine, we so much of this. We have Chinese cuisine. We also have a big immigration of Chinese, and then we have this cuisine called Chifa. So we kind of go to Chifa's once a week, or maybe we do deliveries in the kitchen. So mostly Asian cuisine. No, mostly Asian cuisine for us is interesting because also has this way to put it in the same level, different flavors, you know, the sweetness, the bitterness, the, you know, some savory. So,
levels, the textures, the acidity, the sweetness, the saltiness.
And you say texture, like I truly think like texture as a flavor, you know, like you nowadays with Chinese cuisine is very, very common that you taste the texture, you know, I don't know how to explain this, but in a way, you know, this texture, it kind of change, you know, your experience.
If you have techniques as a chef, and even when I make my own chicken soup, of course I do the mirepoix, blah blah blah, the chicken, I strain it. But at the end, when I strain all the vegetables, which have become soft now, I do like to add brunoise the very last minute, like a carrot, celery, even if it could be a shiitake, ginger. But you want the crunch where it's not
the crunch,
overcooked mess. And you want the bouillon, which should be really like a nice chicken bouillon, but you want the crunch of the veg, and maybe the noodles can be soft or the potatoes a bit like not overcooked. There is like levels and the textures, and okay, carrot is sweet, celery is a bit on the acidic side, but it needs to have those components. So even as a chicken noodle soup, it should be. And that's why my favorite soup in the world is hot and sour. I think it's an incredible soup. And if it's done right, it can be absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. You know, of course, that's why, you know, in French cuisine, you know, when I was a student, I was so picked by, you know, cutting the vegetables in the right way because,
that to be the same and perfect.
Yeah, they gotta be the same. Otherwise, one is gonna be overcooked and the other one is not gonna be. So, I love that thing, you know. I truly believe that this, all these years of practicing the same stuff, you know, probably without being happy in the kitchen, you know, it's such a good training because now you understand, you know, the importance of texture and why you were doing this kind of stuff. You know, sometimes in just a simple, you mentioned, you know, that it's a soup with vegetables and noodles. You know, probably the other day you have like 20 textures.
I think people should learn about this technique rather than calculus in ninth grade, which is never going to help you in life, but hey, just try chickens. I think this lesson should be learned to pre-gardeners, really, because I think it's going to help you in life, but I'm playing for you. Tell me about your pantry. What do you have in your pantry?
Oh, well, mostly we keep cheeses here, some sauces, Peruvian sauces. I mean, here we have kind of like moles style. You know mole, right? Mm-hmm. More like Mexican.
The most complex and complicated thing I could ever do.
Hmm? They are very complex preparations, yes, sure.
Yes,
too many ingredients.
I really admire this. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And then, you know, honestly, because I live next to the restaurant, I'm in the restaurant now. We do lockdowns in our restaurant, which is quite fun.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad. Yeah. So whatever is my fridge, you know, is the fridge of the restaurant. So we are quite lucky in the family to come to the restaurant and open and see what's going on, because there's what is fun about being in Peru is that there's always one producer coming to Lima from different parts of Peru, showing something new, you know, and a new vegetable that something you've never seen before.
I was in Japan.
Yeah.
We had wasabi leaves shipped to us, and there would be a bunch of citrus fruits that would arrive to Zayu as a gift, and I would say, how do you say this? How do you say it? Say, oh, we don't know the name in English, so it's still a miracle. It definitely wasn't yuzu, it wasn't sudachi, it was like 15 other things, and you just say, okay, this is really cool. But I mean, I used to spend hours at the supermarkets just like looking at stuff and taking pictures. Yes, I miss it so much, and therefore I have my sakura.
You're missing going, you miss going to Japan.
I love it so much, and I can't wait to see Zayu-san. So I'm gonna ask you, what would be the countries that you really want to visit that you haven't been to after this crazy pandemic we're in? Where would you go?
You know, I've never been to Africa, and this is a place that I'm really like missing. And I've been to Australia. You know, Australia is so far away from here, like I think like 4 times. But we've never had the time to enjoy, you know, natural Australia. You know, sometimes for me, like going to the cities is not the best. But we do because we go to work, whatever, you know, doing a presentation, cooking, or, you know, doing something related to our presentation of Central stuff, whatever. But I really want to go, like, you know, to go again. Also, Japan, you know, going to the countryside, Italy.
I have not been to Australia, unfortunately, but I have been to Africa, South Africa, Cape Town, and I had an incredible experience eating. And there were times when I was sitting in the restaurants having 5-course meals, and I really felt like I was in south of France, and execution and the produce was fantastic, and it was so easy breezy and gorgeous and really, really
Yeah, you know why I mention it, why I mention Africa, because probably is you know, it's very related to the origin of our civil as of us as a civilization, Asia, and I want to like link. I'm very curious about this. You know, link. You know, where are these recipes and this way of serving food and the way we are. Related to some ingredients and also related to some preparations that probably are very similar to what we have here. So that's why for me, as a cook, is very, very helpful and interesting, and I gotta say amazing to travel, and we have to.
Okay. Inspiring.
Sure, sure. Truly inspiring for innovation, creativity.
My last question before we separate, unfortunately.
Wow.
So what's your vision for the restaurants after COVID? What are your thoughts? Please share.
Well, it's a tricky question because, you know, by the time we, before COVID, still was a tough question because restaurants were like going too quick, and we knew that the world was changing before March. You know, we knew it because we knew in the past 4 years that everything was changing somehow, but we didn't even have the language to explain it, and seeing what is gonna happen next. Of course, something that I know is that we need to change our structures, the way we manage the restaurant has to be changed, the way we work in kitchen has to be changed, the way we produce our ingredients has to be changed, and we all know that. We just need the how.
And on this note, Chef, I want to thank you for your time. It was such a beautiful talk. I can't wait to connect, whether we're in New York, Peru, Australia, wherever we are. Share a glass of wine and talk more about democracy and future endeavors. And thank you so much for being here with us on Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu.